Hello and welcome to the Professional Insight Podcast, Season 5. Thanks very much for everyone listening. My name is Brandon Curry.
I'm Jeff Collins.
Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
So we're pretty excited here to finally get the Niagara's infamous Vin Diesel. We finally were able to secure him. You know, we've been promising for the last couple of episodes that he was going to come on. So anyone that's watching, feel free to comment. This is our Vin Diesel right there, Carlo DeSantis. How's it going, man?
Honored to be here. Oh. Thank you.
Oh, there we go.
He looks like Vin Diesel, but he sounds like Barry Manilow.
He's got a little rock thing going on too, eh?
He's got the rock.
Everybody, eh? He's got
a couple of looks going on. It's working for him. It's working.
Thank you, gentlemen. Kind.
So we wanted to talk about a bunch of things with yourself today, and specifically Collins in the beginning. And we've got a bunch of different topics, but Carlo, your time is finite. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to come on. And then obviously Trevor has a hard stop as well, because he's got some stuff to do in the afternoon as well. So
actually, you know what? Sorry to interrupt you there, but because of the storm, golf course hasn't been able to get things ready for us. So I've been texting with Jay this morning, and I got to do it tomorrow morning instead of today.
Oh, okay. Then great. A 5-hour episode.
Don't have a hard stop today.
Okay.
At least not at that time.
All right. Awesome. Well, that's cool. That's great. I guess that's okay news. Great news. I don't know. Whatever. It is what it is.
Overall.
So the biggest topic that we get a lot whenever we do topics and questions and stuff like that, it's the renovations of homes and what you should do and where you should concentrate and focus. Either you're doing a flip, or, you know, you have a finite amount of cash, regardless. Everyone does. And they're looking at what rooms to prioritize in the home. Now, obviously, Jeff comes at it from a realtor's perspective. But Carlo, I mean, in your experience too, because we'll tell everyone, I mean, you have been on the show before, but for anyone that's new that's listening, you and your mom, owner of Carpet Emporium in St. Catharines, but go ahead and explain to people what you do.
Just give them a refresher, Carlo.
The Emporium Flooring in St. Catharines. And we, you know, sell and install all different types of new construction, condo buildings, subdivisions. So it keeps us busy.
Now, when you are looking at a property, and then you, Collins and Carlo, you guys can both chime in on this one. The questions are, if you're looking at a property to either invest in, but from a like already established flip essentially, or you've just bought it and this is going to be maybe your beginner home or maybe your forever home, but where should someone prioritize, Carlo? What, like, where they should do, they should look first, I guess.
So yeah, I get objectives, right? So if you are getting a place ready to sell, most for the realtors is just taking care of anything that looks too worn, dirty, dated. You know, last week we did some carpet for a realtor, had recommended us to do his listing, you know, and most likely the buyer who's moving in is just going to rent. But we put in some inexpensive carpet just to clean it up and fresh. And I had today, and he had said there's 4 houses for sale on that street, and that was the only one that. So you know, he believes it. That, and I do too, that, you know, people going in to be their dream, but they certainly want it to be, you know, clean and fresh and a current selling. If it's your own home and you're living there, well, that's, you know, prioritize, you know, the order in which you want to update things. So you don't let it, and then next year you're going to reno your bathroom and you got to haul everything. So there's kind of an order to do stuff that makes sense.
Collins?
Yeah, I think that the big change right now that we're coming out of the pandemic and the craziness of the houses, that houses that are are done up nicely that have a small honey-do list, really, or a small to-do list. They're the ones that are selling. I think the biggest things in houses have generally always been kitchens and bathrooms, and those are the number one return on investments. But I strongly believe myself that good quality flooring throughout is one of the simplest things to upgrade your house. For example, a lot of houses I'll go through and they have the old laminate floors throughout everywhere, and they can get pretty worn. They get beaten up. They really get beaten up on the seams. You got old carpet, stuff like that. And one of my favorite things to improve a house to make it look better, just to throw engineered hardwood throughout everything if you can. Kitchens are tend to be the most expensive renovation on the house. They can be, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for flooring throughout the main floor. You know, you can average engineered hardwood floor probably $7-$8. You can speak to that, Carlo. You can get a probably as low as $550, but that makes a big impact on it. And when you're comparing like an engineered hardwood, which, you know, you can have a half inch, three quarters of an inch versus a laminate, which 12 millimeters, it's much sturdier. So the consumer's confidence just when walking through the house makes a big difference on it. So for me, it's kitchens and bathrooms typically that are the number one return investments beside location. Curb appeal can help too, but kitchens and bathrooms, and I really like the flooring to improve a house too.
Yeah, Carl, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, totally agree with the, you know, kitchens and bathrooms are the most coveted renovations, but it's not uncommon now for people, you know, to want to redo their bathroom out that it's $30,000, depending on, you know, if you're doing custom tiled shower, it can get out of control. So yeah. I think, you know, flooring and paint is you know, simpler, more cost-effective fix. Kitchens and bathrooms, like if you're almost just renovating everything,
you got to tell people right. They got to get rid of the 8-inch tile and the 12-inch tile. Get rid of that shit.
Right? Well, the 12x12 tiles got to go. Like that dates a house really bad when you see it. You walk in and you've got a foyer that goes all the way down the hallway in the kitchen. And you've got 800 square feet of 12x12 tile. The client walks in, they think right away that's way too much work, and then they want to go.
Yeah, you boys, tell our listeners what they should be looking for in terms of those things, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Well, it's always, you know, different strokes for different folks, really, right? They all have their own 100% opinion on it, but like what I find, you'll speak better to this, Carlo, but people don't like the 12x12 tile. So they like oversized tile, like 24x24 is really popular. 12x24 tile is really popular. You know, engineered hardwood, super popular. They like the hand scrape. They like the wire brush stuff and all that right now. That's all popular. You know, the light colors are really in right now, I find too. Like it went from dark colors to gray colors to light natural looking colors are very popular right now too. Or at least with our buyers.
Yeah, you're right on, Jeff. Right on. That's the problem with a 12x12 tile is immediately you look at it feels 25 years old right off the bat. So no one really wants that. But to rip all that out, wire mesh, you know, it's huge dust. That's a big problem. People, when they buy a home, they like to tackle that right off the bat. You know, so with the realtor before closing, doing the estimate, and then they close, they get the keys, that's just because they don't want to do it later. They know it's going to turn their house totally upside down.
And I think a big thing in today's market, which everybody keeps saying it's a balanced market, I find it more of a buyer's market right now than a seller's market or a balanced market, just because the inventory is piled up quite a bit. You can very easily, in certain houses that are dated, negotiate off. So if you're in a certain house in a price range at $600,000 to $800,000, for example, very easily, you should be able to, depending on how long it's been on the market, negotiate off $10,000-$15,000. That could replace most of your floors on the main level.
Yeah,
you know? And then it makes a huge impact on your house. So now you've got the money off, you've improved it, and it's probably worth more than the house was when originally listed. You know, to me, the biggest impact is the floors. It's the quickest impact, that and paint, obviously. But the floors, you can rip them all out, change them all, boom, it's a completely different house for people. The worst I find, and when I see older houses, you could literally count 5 or 6 or 7 different types of floors. So one bedroom was done with a certain color laminate. A different one was done with a different one. Like they were on a clearance sale or something. They bought it. the hallway is a different floor. The kitchen's a different floor, you know, different tile. Foyer is a different tile. There's no flow to it at all. And it turns buyers off right away. You know, it's a very simple fix. Minimal amount of different types of floors going throughout it, flows the house all the way through, and then people fall in love with it. The days of throwing this sign up on the lawn and getting bidding wars are over. Now you got to have quality again. And quality is done by proper, you know, proper renovations, which once again, kitchens, bathrooms, I think floors are a gigantic impact on a house. If you can just put, you know, if you ever watch Property Brothers, they always flow the floors right through, and it's popular through the kitchen right now. I still love tile in the kitchen too, but I find a big trend on our builds, at least, is we put the hardwood right through because it flows, so, saves us a bit of money. But
to each I want to, and I, that's a great thing. That's a great segue, Jeff, because I, because I was going to ask Carlo that. There's two things that I wanted to ask. So, Carlo, Jeff just spoke to hardwood in the kitchen. Yeah. Is that advisable? Because, and I only say that because, you know, like, water on hardwood is bad, and there's a higher probability of getting water, you know, on your floor in the kitchen. And also I've also heard, I haven't seen it myself, but hardwood even in the bathroom in some cases.
Engineered hardwood. That at all. I don't like that at all in the bathroom, but
so no, I know. So
would never do hardwood in a bathroom.
Especially with young boys.
Kitchen certainly more practical, but the with today's opens, it just doesn't work. Like, there's not a good spot often to divide it, so it ends because of the flow. Everyone wants that kitchen and great room kind of unified. So if you do that in one floor, it's going to make that space look bigger than if you divide it aisle in the other area would. So I mean, I'm sure that trend will change last 5 years and probably the next 5 years. I would say we're probably going to put in 80% of kitchens at least.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. One trend I'm seeing a little different right now, though, too, that's just creeping up for our builds is people are starting to do in-floor heat on the main floor instead of just the basement. And it's a lot easier to do with tile. So we're having people that are getting quotes on builds coming up, and they want to tile their kitchens, and this is coming back for us, and it's because they want to have a heated floor throughout the kitchen. So it's just easier to do with tile than it is with hardwood. You could technically probably do it with hardwood, but I just think it's safer with the tile.
You Carlos can, but like Carlos the wood insulates, it's not as effective. Much better
to
do with tile.
Yeah.
Carlo tiled my whole main level. So I went the opposite. I did tile in the kitchen, and I put tile all throughout the main room.
See, you're Italian, so you've got to have as much tile in the house as possible. You probably have it
on the walls and ceiling, too. You got to have, like, do you also have the, Romeo, do you have also the, you know, the lions outside of your house, too? Like the marble lions?
They're on order.
I want to know, like, okay, you want to... And do you have a second kitchen downstairs? I just want to make sure. Like, so you
full,
got
full tile. Full tile downstairs. Full tile upstairs. Tile.
Two you kitchens. Got like the pasta going and then cheese down there just working away.
Cold cellar. Full of meat hanging honestly, and pasta.
Have you guys seen Bond's main floor now that it's redone that Carlo and his team did? That large format tile throughout the entire space looks awesome. It really does, especially like when you walk into the entrance. Yeah, right. Like walk into the entrance, have that nice glass railing leading.
You know what, guys? I think Curry, we should buy him lion statues. We should do that.
I think we should. I think we should definitely. And they should just show up at his house.
Yeah,
that would be funny.
Two gold lion statues.
Gold. What do you think we're made out of? No.
Gold painted. You're gold crazy painted. Enough to do $1,000 bet that we weren't going to win.
Listen, we had every chance to win, and I was relying on my other team members, you guys didn't show up. So what are you going to do?
I think they're exhausted from heat exhaustion from the night before.
Oh, maybe dude, that was a one hell of a long golf tournament. But anyway.
No, he's referring to the room at the
auction. The Lions. Just to the Lions before we leave this.
Back to the Lions.
Oh, he wants them. He wants them now. And now he's angling for it.
100% wants the Lions.
from what I believe, Lions in the front of the house for the Italians, and we'll have to research it. indicate that the house is owned.
That owned? Is what?
That the house is owned and that there's not a mortgage on it.
I've heard that too. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've heard that
I'm
too.
I'm not 100%. But...
All right. Well, we're going to go to the Google search. If anyone knows that.
You guys want to put lions on my front?
I heard a pineapple door knocker too means you're swingers. And stars on the front. I heard that too. But yeah, I've heard stars are conflicting.
So
imagine if you bought a house. All right, rookie's in. In Italy, they symbolize power and prestige, while in Quebec, homeowners place one or two lions in front of the house once they have paid off their mortgage. Oh, thank you, rookie.
You literally drop lion on front of house, and that piece about Quebec comes up. Says it right there. Yeah. First search.
So what does it mean to me? Because I'm French and Italian.
See, that means to me as
there
a
you
real
go.
Agent, they've got no mortgage. I can grind them a bit more. They got no mortgage.
Well, yeah, but now you just have to, like, that's the other thing too. The pineapple door knocker, you better be as a realtor. That's why you need to deal with a realtor, because imagine buying a house with a pineapple door knocker and not knowing that that symbolizes that you're a swinger.
That's the number one reason.
That could get awkward real quick.
Or it could get really great. You could change your whole life. You know, you could go to a whole new world, whole new level.
Whole new
level. That's got to actually a search category in there is swinger paraphernalia.
Swinger,
you can put it in there.
So this rant's kind of gone on the.
Yeah, yeah. So
Sorry, Carlo.
Somehow we got onto pineapple door knockers from putting lions on the front of Romeo's house.
You should not have a pineapple door knocker, and you should have lions on the front.
Well, it depends. To each their own, Vaughn. Some people might want a pineapple. Maybe they're unsuccessful swingers. They don't know why people are calling them. Just got to put the right thing on their door.
Well, if we're screwing around with Bond and putting lions on his porch, I think Collins is going to have a pineapple door knocker.
Hell yeah.
I think
how do you know I don't have one already?
Well, the cheaper option for Bondo is to put just in the middle of the night, put a pineapple door knocker on the front with a bunch of stars and, you know, a big welcome sign. And then let's just see what happens. Come in and see my new porcelain kitchen / living room / great room.
Fireplace.
It's very Californian.
Wow. Sorry, Carlo. We went way off tangent there.
Fireplace.
Yeah, totally. So, anyway, Carlo.
Josh's place looking great. Really like the, you know, that's a small percentage of what people are doing, but it looks really good to do right through. But it's got to be pretty modern design, which, you know, Josh's house suits that.
Now, are you seeing a rise, Carlo, in carpet coming back? Or do you think that's been... Because that definitely is...
I love carpet now. I love it.
40, 50 years old from a... It, like, shag carpet was everywhere in the 70s. And now...
Shag's back, baby. Shag's back.
What are you seeing from... Because, like, and I only say that because now your family business has been around for a while. And you are...
Yep.
Carpet Emporium, like that's the primary of your, you know, Carpet Emporium. So then, you know, it's been 50 years. People are tearing that up. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's funny. Like the younger generation, probably like our generation and a little young people have ever had nice carpet. Their experience is with like bait. So I find when you put a nice piece of carpet in someone's house. Like they'd never really experienced that before. So, you know, the people kind of are really happy with it, but it's a pretty small percentage. Like most new houses we do is for budget reasons. If they had their way, it would be all hard wooden tile. They wouldn't have any carpet. It's more base price. You know, the builder's going to have carpet as standard, a big upgrade to change to wood. So we still end up doing a lot of carpet. I think it's making a comeback, but it is, you know, a nice design element that few people like, and designers will certainly put some carpet in the house just to soften it up.
Especially in the basement, like carpet in the basement really warms up the basement. If you got young kids, they can roll around in the basement and it's comfortable. You know, I don't like it on the main floor at all, but the basement, we've had, 25% of clients that get their basements finished like the carpet now. It's quick. It's affordable. It's warm. You know, it's great. Like I remember the one of the first houses we built, we did the basement carpet just to, you know, it was a quick finish for it. And we had an open house and all the kids were rolling around on the carpet and, you know, and playing and wrestling and stuff. And then they couldn't do it on the hardwood because they get bruised everywhere and stuff like that. So it's warm. You have a sleepover the kids. No, they can put their sleeping bags down there. It's very comfortable. I like it in the basement. I don't like it on the main floors.
Well, it's a hygiene thing, I think, for the most part, right? I think people that are just so paranoid now about dirt and germs and...
Well, it's the pets. The pets are the worst part. Like, cats like to pee in the corners and then, you know, it's like you never get it out. That's... Like when you rip out old carpet on a house, like the stains you see underneath it is just, you know,
just the shit that accumulates. Like you pull out a carpet and like you sweep up a good pile of stuff there, dust and just whoever knows what the hell's in there, right? So I mean, anybody that's pulled up a carpet definitely be turned off for putting down another carpet.
You're gross.
Big reason why people want vinyl or hardwood for sure. Is it's just practicality, cleanliness.
Yeah, and are you finding the luxury vinyl clicks the most popular in the basement right now too, Carlo?
Yeah, it's waterproof, it's warm, you know, it's better than laminate vinyl for sure. And it looks so good these days. It's like looks better than an expensive hardwood. So you know, even that will do. Like a nice house, like a $2 million house and kids, and they'll put in like a nice vinyl. Like I never thought that was practical and easy to live with. And it looks so good that that's happening. If you told me 5 years ago that someone would be putting like vinyl instead of hardwood in a $2 million.
Yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts though on like what trends do you, besides the hardwood going throughout, what are other trends that you're finding when you're going into homes, Carlo? Because you do deal with a lot of very cutting edge builders that are always very up to date on the trends and stuff like that. So maybe especially with interest rates, which we're going to get into, you know, fairly momentarily, but you know, what are you seeing that if someone's buying an existing home that they can probably do that's inexpensive, cheap, or like relative to a total reno and a total gut that could kind of keep them on the cutting edge of design?
So like in the really nice stuff that we're doing, want their homes to look unique. So you know, you can't be very unique with hardwood or LVP often that, you know, we create that unique. So we'll have a home that will do tile on the bathroom that's 4 foot by 4 foot tile, like huge tiles, or chevron or some type of pattern or something to make it unique. So I find homes, you know, most of it's going to be wood, but in those smaller areas that are tiled patterns, things that really give it some personality. In an office or one room in like a hardwood herringbone or chevron pattern, a little bit of detail. They're not often building 4 foot houses. They're building, you know, 2,500 square foot bungalow with high ceiling finishes. So that's like the nicer stuff that's getting done in Niagara right now, driven by baby boomers, right? They want one floor bungalows, want that huge house anymore.
What have you guys seen like the two-tone kitchen cupboards?
Like uppers and lowers, different colors, you mean? Yeah. I find that's kind of gone out a little bit. It's a lot of the islands are different colors, and then you have different ones. But you're seeing like new dark color cabinets come into play now too, like black kitchens and stuff like that. It's a little bit different.
So if you've got – so and I think the biggest thing for carpet, Carlo, that I, you know, just as a dad of a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old is the stain, potential. I mean, we talked about pets, but I mean, kids probably up until the age of like 11, 12. I mean, Trevor and I were having this conversation on Tuesday at the auction, you know, just to hold off. Right. Remember that conversation, Trev, that to hold off on getting a new kitchen table, get a, you know, a new coffee table, just wait until your youngest is like 10 or 11 before you even contemplate that.
100%.
Which I think is a great advice. But you mentioned that. So that's the thing why people sometimes shy away from, because a really nice, like, plush carpet is I do agree with everyone on here. It's really nice, but is there, would you go then that click vinyl that it, as an example, it's very durable and hardy that can hold up to the kids too?
Yeah, in the basement.
You could do the vinyl and you could do like an area rug on top to give it to be a little bit softer. But, you know, people with small kids like to have a carpeted.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you're going to keep it. Yeah, it's going to get some jars over the years. And you're going to replace it at some point. So you're going to do it like now, Curry, you know, 14 or something. You'll be ready for a change and you replace it. But stains a bit of carpet, not perfectly, but there's stain cleaners. You can kind of manage it.
Okay.
Like, it's, it's so weird to me because just based on the... My decisions for flooring are, for the most part, completely based on health and germs, right? Because I'm, you know me, I'm a little bit skittish when it comes to germs. But the most comfortable is carpet, by far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By far. The most comfortable to walk on temperatures-wise and feel-wise is carpet. And it's funny that, you know,
You can feel a difference on your knees and legs when you walk down in a carpet. And you're like, oh, wow, this is, like, comfy. It's cushiony and all that. It's nice. It just, we haven't had so much carpet in houses for so long. Like, I find maybe 5% of houses I see that have carpet. That's it.
Yeah. Nothing crazy. Better than carpet in a bathroom.
Oh, that's gross when you see it. The stains around
that is so gross. Nasty. Whoever started that trend is like so wrong on so many levels.
Speaking of trends, too, I want to circle back to it. When we were talking
about the lions?
No. Carla was talking about backsplashes is another big thing. I find a lot of herringbone and chevron tile back there. I also find it's almost a cyclical thing where mudrooms now are starting to get the little 8x8 tiles that are pattern tiles, and you have to put them all together with color and stuff like that, right? Not in big rooms, but a mudroom, you know, a foyer maybe sometimes, or a back wall for like a custom cabinets with like a locker type area. There's a lot of really neat patterns coming out in tile right now. I love it. I love seeing the color there. It seems like it's almost a flashback to another Italian house, you know, where they had the pattern tile everywhere. And now you can go in a house and it's like a 30, 40-year-old tile of pattern tile. You're like, wow, that almost looks like it's brand new and it's 40 years old because that style is coming back and it's coming back pretty hard right now.
You're right on. Like, you guys didn't really need me. Jeff's a flooring expert pretty much. Yeah.
I'm a trend expert, that's it.
The boy nut room used to be a really low priority room that no one cared about. It was like, oh, let's be sick. But yeah, you're right, Jeff. It's like front and center now. People want like pretty cubby Instagram looking stuff or patterns. So it's a funny space that low priority that now people want done nice. And the other thing that's funny too is like the utility room no one ever used to do. And now when we do a custom house, then we're doing like tile or we're doing vinyl plank in that utility room that never used to get.
Yeah, they want every inch of the house done.
Maximize the space, eh?
Not just another place to decorate.
But I'm doing that too, but I'm doing it a different way. Like, because I'm starting to utilize my utility room as a storage room and I'm bringing my workbench in there too, right? Because might as well use it, pull it out of my garage. So frees up a little bit more space in the garage.
What are you making on your workbench there?
I'm going to start doing some woodwork.
Oh, there you go. You're going to get into some of that acrylic stuff?
Pineapple knocker?
Epoxy? You're going to chop down?
Big pineapple
knocker. You're going to do like a little David Bunyan there and just chop down a tree and then, you know.
I was thinking wooden lions.
Okay.
That's a whole another stage for Italian. Oh, you got wooden lions in the front. It means that you, you're liquid and you have no mortgage, eh?
We'll wrap them in tin foil for you.
You pay your damn off your second mortgage, you get a wooden lion.
That's it. That's right. That's right.
Well, he's got a vacation home paid off, no mortgage, and a house paid off, no mortgage. Then you get a wooden lion.
You get a wooden lion, yeah, covered in epoxy.
Just a little bit inside the big lion, right?
So on, well, now that we're, actually, that's not a bad segue. Let's just talk about, mortgages. Yeah. And, you know, Carlo, we'll like you to have your input in this as well, because, you were saying, you know, a while ago, we were having a conversation, I think about maybe 3 months ago, and you were mentioning about how, hey, if the economy's good, your house is going up in value, you have more of the home equity line of credit, which typically, you know, notwithstanding free cash flow, that's where people usually take home rentals off of, is the home equity line of credit, because at least it's justifiable. Yeah. Now with the interest rate increases, just for anyone that is maybe listening to this a couple months after, you know, we're recording this, well, if you're listening to this, we're actually live towards the end of July. So it's just right about a week after the Bank of Canada did a shock 1% rate increase. Yeah, and we'll get into
those. When's the last time there was a 1% increase?
1998.
Yeah, it's been 44 years.
It's been 39 years since we've seen inflation this high, too,
1998.
Right?
1998.
25
years. I was confusing both the inflation number, which is 39 years. That's right. Yeah. So we're crushing it. You know, June CPI was just 8.1%, Trev, I think what came out.
Yeah, June, so, that was just reported yesterday, the 20th of July, by StatsCan. It was 8.1% for the CPI, up from 7.7 the month prior for May.
I do think inflation has peaked. I mean, it might hit, like, let's say, you know, maybe a little bit higher than 8, but I think we're done now on it. But that being said, Carlo, what are you seeing when people are coming into the store? I mean, you were open and honest and said, like, you guys were extremely busy during COVID.
It was.
Has that traffic subsided?
Yeah. So in COVID, like, insane. And, you know, felt even busier trying. There was times where, you know, we could only do essential projects, but we couldn't let people samples outside. So it was messy. So, you know, probably when they started putting the interest rates up, the store traffic really quieted down. So I think people are being a little bit more cautious, less likely to want to run a big project. But the new construction is still on fire. New construction going on. And most of that new construction, so a builder has, you know, 50 houses, they're all sold. So the pipe's pretty solid for the next 2 years just with new construction. But yeah, it's been more, which sometimes you get in the summer too. So we'll see what that translates to in September, October, which it typically picks up more.
How are you feeling about the supplies, Carlo? Is there a lot of backordered stuff right now for you guys?
So, you know, it kind of changes. Vinyl and the hardwood are pretty good right now. The tile is really bad. Europe,
yeah,
and they have chaos over there with the war, so the energy prices are countries that are just closing, so tile is kind of chaos. But, you know, there's so, if, you know, the one you pick's not available, well, there's another substitute that's going to be pretty similar, so we're able to kind of navigate around that. You know, prices, the price increases starts, which is a good thing. So to Curry's point, I think the the inflation hopefully is, because it was like every month, you know, suppliers are just putting up. Hopefully that's the case and we can get back to some normalcy.
It's got to get rid of the gas surcharges that are everywhere all the time right now.
Yeah, that's on everything. And the container shipping, you know, it's $1,000 to ship a container from China to Canada, and it reached a peak, and now it's kind of hovering just below 20,000. So I mean, it's a decrease the cost of all kinds of things.
Yeah,
because some things like vinyl plank, there is no domestic option. It comes from China or nothing.
Yeah.
Sorry, what was that? What was that value per sea can you said, Cardinal?
So it used to be about China, and it reached the peak of 30,000. A tile in a container, you can get, like, usually a container of tiles. So you think if it goes up $25,000, that's over $1 a foot. Just on.
Yeah, 100%.
So but that's starting to come down. So hopefully...
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of stuff starting to come down.
Yeah.
It's good.
What are your thoughts on, and this is again to the both of you, like, because because of CPI, because of, you know, inflation and what have you, there's been some consistent chatter that, you know, yeah, it's starting to come down and we're expecting definitely by Q4 to have a little bit of pressure taken off, you know, the pressure cooker. In order to, you know, get as supply chains go back to normal. But I guess there's the cynic in a lot of people that, you know, why would builders or why would retailers drop their prices when they can keep the extra margin? Carlo, you want to speak to that? And like, I heard that on the weekend too. I've heard that a couple times.
So, I mean, most projects, right? That putting in quotes, we're bidding on these things. So, and it's pretty competitive in times. Like I had a commercial project I bid on. It was about $150,000. You know, I have a good relationship with the builder, but basically, you know, he told me like the two, and you know, luckily we got the job because of a relationship. I'm just going to keep all that margin. I'm not competitive. You're not going to get the work. So as you know, demand dries up a little bit, and I think that's good for our economy, hopefully competitive plays. And that was tough to navigate during COVID because competitive normally, and people were like, if you want it, here's the price, and you didn't have an option there for everyone if things go back to being competitive. And it's the same with a builder. Jeff is building a house and it's, you know, $850,000 down. You know, the guy across the street might be doing a similar house for $800,000. He's so, you know, there's no way as being in a, I'm just going to like hold on to margin because you decide you want to keep it. Like it's, so,
to be sure. Yeah. It'd be short-lived, right, if you hold on to those margins because, you know, consumers are going to catch on and be like, no, I'm not going
there. They're smart. Yeah. No.
As far as building, you got to look at the different scenarios, though, too. As a builder, you can pre-sell them and you got to go through the pandemic here. If it was pre-sold, you could have locked in a price that it's not even close to what the value is when they get the keys.
Yeah.
You could also sell right now where, like, say you sold in January, February, and their prices plummeted before they get the keys too. But a lot of builders, they typically have allowances on their materials, right? So if you have an allowance of your flooring, say $6 a square foot, it's really up to the buyer, right? So as a builder, there's different scenarios where we had sold, I'd say 6 or 7 bungalows in Dane City, and these were sold in 2021 and closed in 2022. And we sold them between 625 and 695. They got the keys as worth 850 to 900. Okay. Right. And we still had to build them. And as a builder, we're Tarion protected where we had the ability, if we wanted to say, look, material increases, we're going to hold off for a while and see what happens. So we could have delayed it for a year, but we made the conscious effort not to do that because that'll just kill our reputation. So we sucked it up. We ate it up. You know, we did it right there. We did pass on some price increases to our clients, though, because we had an allowance of $450 a square foot for hardwood. And Carly, you know, you can't even really get that anymore.
No.
And so when we went to $525 on that and they had, say, 1,200 square feet of flooring, they had to pay a 75-cent increase on 1,200 square feet of flooring, and it was passed on to the buyer. And that was the only protection we really had on our contract, was on the flooring, because the lumber, we ate lumber prices like nobody's business. You know, probably $10,000, $15,000 between trusses and a lumber package. We ate that, so it was less profit. The client made more money, and we had to suck it up and do it. But now it's a good question, because you could have sold in January, February, a pre-sold house at a peak price of, say, $900,000 for a house. They get the keys, say, at the end of this year, November, and it might be worth $800,000. And this is where breach of contract could come in, because people are trying to, yeah, the opposite. So it goes up, comes down, too. And really, people have to understand, in today's modern world, we haven't been through a pandemic before. So we didn't know how it was going to affect everybody health-wise, money-wise, material-wise. We're learning all this. We're learning that, you know, it's almost like the government purposely inflated the houses to distract everyone for a couple of years. And now they're purposely deflating the house values, you know, and it's coming down on that. But material differences, nobody expected that. Nobody expected that. And there's a lot of hardships from it. And everyone's going to get through it and all that, but it's difficult. And I don't think you can inflate the prices. Our problem right now for our builds, we haven't pre-sold any of them because we thought, let's stop pre-selling them. And now we might eat it a little bit on the back end, because when we sell our properties, it's going to be at market value. Market value sells houses. So just like Carlos said, if the one builder is selling at 800 and we thought we're priced at 850, guess what? We're not going to sell. The other builder will at 800. So we'll have to adjust our prices.
You know, and don't you think much of, you know, the cost of housing is driven by the cost of your land? You know, especially with COVID, you know, you could buy a decent lot in hundreds before COVID. And now you see lots getting sold for $10,000 rented. Like, you'll get a 40, 45 foot lot for sale in St. Catharines. By the time you get a building permit, get some plans done, like, you're over 500 before you. So, you know, if that land stays that high, I don't see how housing is take, you know, a big dip like some people predict, because the cost of the construction happened.
I'm with you 100%, Carlo. Yeah. I'm with you 100%. I view this as a little bit of a correction. And I follow the market, the real estate markets, fairly closely. I mean, and I said it before, and I'll say it again. We're an hour from Toronto, right? Toronto is a metropolis that is going to be constantly in a state of.
Well, it's a top four city in North America, right? So, like, and we're that close to it. Like, people don't realize that.
I'm not that, like, they're not making any more land in the peninsula. You know what I mean? The value of lands, I think, are going to continue to sustain themselves, right, for the most part. What we saw for the first quarter in 2022 was just an anomaly, and it just kind of shot up insane for a few months there. But if you take a look at the numbers, I would argue that June 2022, the average value of your home is still worth in the Niagara region more than in June 2021.
Not necessarily January
2022. But definitely,
you're probably up about 5% from June last year and June this year.
Up,
and that's what I told everybody. Yeah, from last year, yeah. I told everybody during the pandemic, it wasn't the houses that went up in value; it was the land the houses sat on. Yeah. That's what went up in value. Okay, and people don't understand that properly, but it's just there was such a demand for a detached lot in the Niagara region from the people from GTA that they went crazy on, and they didn't really care about the house so much because. For $100,000, you can fix up a house pretty nice. So It's just about getting that lot in a certain location that people are just hungry for. And so, and the best, Carlo pointed out perfectly, and it's funny because I'm an expert in yours and it seems like you're an expert in my industry now too, Carlo, is that the lots we were buying in 2020 in Dane City, for example, were $100,000 for the lot by itself. which nobody wanted when we bought them. We bought them all at $100,000. Can you imagine buying detached lots at $100,000 right now? Like that are 40 feet wide? Sign me up. I'll take 50 of them anytime. 100. Right? But now those same lots are $300,000. So in the course of 2 years, it went up $100,000 a year each year. And that's the difference. So if you look at the house prices that went up, there, you know, it's a parallel to the value of the land. So the land went up, and then the house that sat on the land, they went up with it too.
Those junior builders that you sold those cheaper lots to better.
Well, Adam's one of my closest friends, right? And I gave him great deals in those lots to help him get going. Like he got three of the lots, like great deals.
But don't realize the deal that they got, Jeff, especially when you structured it. So.
But we were helping them out, and we needed to move some of the lots. If we didn't move the lots, we'd lose our options on it. So it was me helping out. It was me helping a good client. He's a loyal client, hopefully for the rest of his life and all that too. And that's what you got to do in business. It's all relationships, right? So we had to move the land. Now we're on to 15 townhouses. Then we're on 22 lots in Fort Erie, you know, and this is land that's valuable. So when people say, well, I got to find land, I say, get the land shovel ready. And that's like the most valuable commodity in Niagara. If you can find a house that you say, boom, here you go. Start designing your permit. You have nothing else to do. That's what people want right now.
My message is weather the storm, right? Weather the storm a little bit, right?
Also look at it like people are panicking, but it's July. This is the first July we've had in Canada or Niagara region in 2 years that's semi-normal. There's golf tournaments going on. There's get-togethers. There's auctions and stuff like that. Nobody's had this for 2 years. Nobody's had barbecues in their backyard.
Not in summer, no.
You know, COVID's up a little bit right now. But there's not that many people panicking about getting it right now at all. They're like, it's a cold. No. I'm done. I'm living life. Whatever. I'm going to risk it now. And this is the first July we've had in 3 years, basically, where you do it. So when it goes back to school in September, I believe there's going to be a little bit of a bump in September. The interesting part is they're also predicting another interest rate climb. But, you know, we're still historically low, I think, in interest rates, right? It's just that we are spoiled for so long with the low interest rates. It was free money.
So historically we are low, but Carlo, you were going to comment and then I'll comment on the interest rate stuff.
So, what was it? You know, another part that people, because you read comments online and you see builders being greedy or charging too much. I don't think they have an appreciation for the lots are and all the regulatory stuff that you have to go through. Like what's
red tape.
Development fees and parkland dedication, like, you know, it's over $50,000.
5% of parkland dedication fee now in Niagara.
Yeah. So
crazy. That's why there's new parks everywhere. They're everywhere now.
Yeah. I'm doing an addition. I'm getting ready for, and the back of the building is L-shaped. So we're really just putting two walls square off the L, and the permit and development fees are like it is.
How much was that, Carlo? I missed it.
Almost 96 or 97,000.
Jeez.
Just for the permits.
Red tape.
Permit and development fee. So that's putting like two walls, a roof up. Obviously, there's some like kitchens, no bathrooms. It's a big
actual cost. Probably, right, Carlo?
Pardon?
Some architectural costs?
Yeah.
Engineering?
I have,
Engineering, though, that's always going to be a cost for it. It's the permits that's ridiculous. Like, think about a basement permit right now. Do you know anyone who gets a basement permit when they finish their basement? Almost nobody. Never. You know what it costs me to get a permit on my basement to check the cold air returns only? $4,000. And it's already framed. Already electrical, which they see before final occupancy. So I wanted to put drywall up on there, $4,000. They want to lower the cost of housing, lower the cost of the red tape bullshit that's going on there. The permits and all that crap is ridiculous. Here's another example. We're building semis right now. So the semi permit basically in Port Coburn right now for 1,700 square foot, approximately 45,000 with regional fee, development fees and everything. And then, so we get the permit, we build the whole semis. We're about to put them on market in a month. And then they're like, well, we talked about this bond the other day. Oh, you've got to sever it now. I mean, I'm like, what the F do you mean I got to sever it? You've given us permits on these two lots. Oh, you got to sever it. I'm like, it's permitted already. We've already got it. All we need is the legal description changed because we've got one parcel of land. We now need to make it two, which Bond can do, like, you know, a quick whatever change. No, no, we have to do that. Okay, can we fill out this thing as if I'm developing it? $1,800. $1,800 to sever something
just
that needs public notice that they've already permitted us to do, that I'll sue their ass if they don't let me do it. How are they going to stop it? So it's an $1,800 cash grab at the end for nothing. For nothing.
And Jeff, it's not even like, you know, the money is, you know, obviously, and ultimately that's getting passed on to your buyers.
Yep.
So, you know, this is part of what makes, but it's the time. How many hours do you have to spend talking to Bond, talking to the city? Like, it's bucks. I bet you're spending $1,800 or more of your time navigating through.
Well, the grading plans alone suck up so much time, but just getting them to approve stuff. Like, you give something to the city, it's 3 days before they even acknowledge that they got it. You know?
And I hear Port Colborne's one of the better ones.
We'll talk offline. No? I'll give you all kinds of stories. They basically just cleaned house there. They cleaned house there because of the complaints. They've cleaned house. Hmm. The now, problem is right now in all municipalities, my take on is they're not paying the people who approve everything enough money. So they're walking to private industry. And now you have a bunch of inexperienced people in place who are overwhelmed with the amount of business that they're getting. It delays everything and increases the cost. And as a builder, one of your biggest costs is carrying costs. So if you're dragging something out 3-4 months, it's not adding $1,000 to your cost. You're talking 10, 15, 20,000 sometimes on it, you know, because a lot of construction loans are not 2-3%. You're talking 8, 10, 12%.
Yeah.
You know, and that's huge. It's huge. And do they care? Is there someone you can talk to about that? Not at all. There's no ombudsman or anything like that. You can talk to whoever, and then it gets lost. And then 5 days before they get back, turns into 10 to 15 to 20. It's extra cost. And you're right. Who pays for it? It's the end consumer that typically pays for it.
People think, like, oh, who cares if pays, you know, $50,000 a permit for a house? You know, like, they're a big company. They can afford it. They're financing it. The homeowner's paying for it. But because the homeowner's not writing it, it kind of gets a pass. But, you know, when people are shocked that, you know, $1,000, that's a big part of why.
Yeah, it's huge.
Well, not only that, I think a lot of people need to realize, like, a lot of areas outside of the main municipal, the main capital cities in Canada really have had stagnant growth when it came to housing. I mean, you could probably point to maybe Milton or Brampton or maybe Burlington in the last, you know, 30, 40 years. But, you know, your Niagara's, you know, your down Windsor area, up in, you know, Northern Ontario, even in other provinces across the country, you didn't have the growth that we've had in the last couple of years. And so, to your point, Jeff, you know, you've got people still operating at the pace that it used to be back in the early 2000s. And this is just not that long. I'm talking 12 years ago. And so they just don't know what to do because of the massive influx. And then, of course, government is bureaucratic at the, you know, best of times. And they can't even figure out how to even unbureaucrat themselves. It's an absolute nightmare to navigate. I mean, even for me to put in a pool enclosure permit, when I finally got one, I mean, Trevor and I did it in the same year, and it's absolutely mind-boggling dealing with the municipality on that. I made the mistake of giving them a rendering of my landscaper's drawings, because I'm thinking, all right, because they give you literally like a sheet of paper where you fill out the first page is all the information they need. And then a sheet of paper, literally a blank A4. And you actually have to hand draw where your pool goes. Like, how archaic is that? Like, that doesn't even make any sense.
Wouldn't your pool company have that program for you? Like, draw it up for you? Like,
so, but this is my point.
Yeah,
Jeff,
but you extra cost.
For an extra cost. Okay, fine. But I can do the application myself. That's not a big deal. But they would still get, the pool company would still get that application. That is the permit process for the city of St. Catharines and actually for many municipalities around Niagara specifically. Mm-hmm. So I get this and I'm like, well, I'm not going to do a kindergarten project of let's see how well Brandon can draw. So I call up my landscaper who had already done a mock-up. Hey, what's that, Bondo?
You got Hartley to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So I got my landscaper who had already done a mock-up, just a mock-up or a temporary drawing to kind of put where things go. And he actually obviously put where the pool was supposed to go. And so I submitted that. Now, the permit officer, I think is what you call him, got back to me like literally probably that was in the beginning of December of 2020. And he didn't get back to me for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, you got to go in there. Because of
vacation
person.
And what have you.
Yeah.
And so it sat in the inbox for 3 days to let COVID die on the envelope that I left. I don't know why, but it had to be quarantined for 3 days.
It still happens. And it still happens today.
Still happens today because it has to die on the envelope or something. I don't know. And then they get to it. And then he starts asking questions about like what my patio stones are going to be or whatever. So I did it so he could get actual to the inch drawings of where my pool is. And he actually legitimately said, oh, you have to move it one more foot, left, right, or whatever, because you're going to be, yeah, all that kind of stuff. That's cool. But then he started poking around. Oh, how big are these trees going to be? Well, you got to make sure. I'm like, it's a mock-up drawing. You imbecile. Like this is, so you give me an A4 where all I got to do is draw the pool. And that's all you're worried about because the pool enclosure permit, and you're now more concerned about what trees and what kind of size stones I'm getting. It's not your bloody business.
Yeah, he's developing a whole subdivision.
It's absolutely.
Well, let me just tell one more story here, quick, about the issues that are going on with the cities and all that stuff. In Dane City right now, we have when you're building a house, you have to get a grading plan. So you don't really have a choice on this. The engineer for the grading designs the flow of the water for your house, okay, in a subdivision. So when there's a whole subdivision design, there's a master grading plan so the water flows properly, catch basins, all that stuff, swales and stuff like that. So in Dane City where we had, there's 28 houses that were there. We built 20 of them. And this was in an approved draft plan of subdivision, and we took the 27 lots. Now, the problem is we get designed grading plan that the engineer who designed the whole subdivision goes off the previous master grading plan to say, well, this is where the water's got to flow and all that. No problem. So they design a grading plan for each individual lot. They send it to the city of Welland. Okay, I'll even call it the city because I'm pissed about this stuff. Send it to the city of Welland. Their engineer looks at it whenever they feel like doing it because it's supposed to be a 10-day turnaround for a permit. And it's lately been 3 to 4 weeks for it, which is an extra added cost on it, blah, 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 blah. Right? So they approve the grading plan. So as a builder, you build the house, you finish the house. When you're completely done, then you grade all the dirt and you put your sod down. You have to have sod on it because there's a grading deposit of about $3,000 in Welland. So when it's all done, they shoot their grades and make sure it's done right. So the process is grade it, get Upper Canada's a company we use. They come back, they shoot the grades. And if it's approved, here's an approved grading plan. They send it to the city approves it, boom, they do it. So the problem here lies is the people, after they get their grading deposit behind us, what do they like to do? They like to cover in their swale because people don't like little ditches in their backyard. The problem is when the rear houses have the swales covered in, the water flows onto the lowest part of the land, which is our neighbor's house. So for us, we're doing exactly what the city's approved, exactly what was designed by the engineer who did the whole situation. And now what's the city want us to do? They want us to correct it according to the back property because they don't want to go to the back owner who's already got the grading deposit back and say, you have to put your swale back in there. So we've tried to correct it 3 times for them.
That's bull.
And now they want us to redo the grading plan that they've already approved. So it's landscaped 2-3 times now. Now they're suggesting we put in a French drain, you know, which is added cost, digging back up, adding. It's like $15 a linear foot for it and all this stuff. And so my last response to them was they threw us under the bus, said to our clients, because our clients are mad because the grass in their backyard is dying because the water sits there. right? So they want it to be corrected. They're protecting their terrarium.
Yep.
So our argument here is, this is the city's fault. You've already approved our grading plan. And now you're saying it's not right. And the problem here is the people behind you, which you're not going to fight or tell them that they're in a bylaw infraction because they don't have a bylaw about it, who eliminated their swales, and it's as obvious as the day is long, that they have to put their swale back. So rather than doing that, they're trying to push that back on us. And we're fighting back saying, no, 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 no. You approved this grading plan. Okay? So we don't have to do anything. But now the homeowners are mad. So the only way this gets wrapped up is we stroke a check and get it fixed. But this is the biggest headache I find right now in the Niagara region is that the grading plan, there is no bylaw after the grading deposit is given back that they have to keep their swale. They can do whatever they want to their property after. There's no recourse, you know?
Technically not correct, Jeff, because most of them have the subdivision agreement that stays registered against title to the property. And anytime that we're meeting with clients and there's a subdivision agreement, that's still registered on title. Like, they'll expire, I think, 40 years or something like that. So it's not a forever solution. But as long as the subdivision agreement is registered on title, the lawyer should be advising the clients that they should not be changing the grading of their property, period.
So really, if we can prove that there was a swale in the backyard and it's no longer there, we could probably go after them, or do we go after the city? Should the city's the one not enforcing it.
Yep. Yeah, should be able to, but I would stick to your laurels on that one, because at the end of the day, you've got a plan that's approved.
By the city.
They've approved the plan, right? Mm-hmm. Did they do their final inspection, right, when they came by?
Well, this is the argument right here, because we have some of them that aren't approved yet. But when you get the permit approved, they give you a site copy. And yeah, the site copy is on the grading plan. So they stamp it, site copy. So they've approved the design for that lot.
Yep.
And now they're saying we have to change it. It's complete bullshit.
Yeah, 100%. Especially if you've spent money to get it to that point, and then you'd be out further costs to bring it in.
Well, and then if they want to do that, is saying, well, we have to change it to as is grading. They should be doing that permit stage, not after everything's done. Right?
Right.
Really, they should be going back to the neighbor who's eliminated their swale.
100%.
And so you got to put that back. You've got to put that back. Absolutely. Because you're causing problems back there.
But if they don't
want to do that.
If they don't, municipalities don't generally want to get involved in neighboring dispute they won't get involved when it becomes a neighbor dispute as water runoff, right? They'll say, mm-hmm, litigate.
Yeah.
Litigate.
Well, let's litigate against the city. That's the problem. Talk to Mr. Bruce Smith.
Yeah.
Now, well, let's change. Like, let's try to segue back to, you Bruce know, like nice back to the topic of hand, which is basically the cost of actually building. And a lot of people just don't realize that. Like when a builder goes in and buys in let's say Jeff's case, you know, 27 lots, that's not cash that they're using. They're leveraging it. And any accountant and any financial planner would advise them to do so, because that's the cheapest way to carry. But all I want to say is that all goes into the cost of the home. And the longer that these permits take, the longer that the processing takes for builders and, you know, even realtors, like Carlo, who wants to build an addition onto his house, or onto his property, sorry, onto his business, that all adds money and adds cost, because they're carrying it. And they want to flip it in as quickly as possible. So when these interest rate rises, when these interest rate happens, these increases happen, especially when it goes 25 basis points more than what basically every single economist was actually thinking it would go, it actually has a massive impact. And it's something that Trevor brought up, which is 100% correct. And that is, they're using data from 30 days ago to make their decision. Well, the fact that you talk to, again, you listen and read and talk to any economists who are way smarter than anyone else on this program, they will say at the minimum, it takes a good solid 6 months for monetary policy, which is anything that the Bank of Canada or the federal government does, to impact the economy and to actually filtrate through the economy so that we actually start to see true impact. It can take up to 18 months. And then we were chatting, Carlo, you and I were chatting yesterday, and we had this preliminary conversation, and you emphatically, shook your head yes. And basically you gave the example that because of supply chain issues, it's taking longer, and obviously permit issues and the delay and the red tape and what have you, it's taking builders longer to finish a house. So when I built my home with, back in 2013, I laid a deposit down in January. I had the house fully built and in my possession by August 1st. Well, because of supply chain issues and delays and permits and all this kind of stuff, you're adding on another 3 or 4 months.
Yep.
So a person who's walking in to try to qualify for that mortgage, because that's what a builder needs. They need a written letter from the bank saying, yes, these people are good, go ahead, they've got the funding. But with interest rates, you're raising the interest rates by 1%, which is, you're not changing the mortgage rules. So people are not being able to qualify for either new builds or even builds in general. And yet they're working on 30-day old data in order to make their decision.
Coming out of a pandemic,
and they're not even going to be able to get their home for about another 9 to 12 months. Go ahead, Carlo.
If, let's say you were contemplating doing a, an inch, and they put the interest rate up 1%, and you and Kristen, our payment went up, maybe we should put that on the back burner. Well, if you did that job, probably coming to me to do flooring like 12 months after you make that decision, because you guys are going to decide, you're going to get a contractor lined up. You're going to do, by the time I do the flooring, it's 12 months. So, that the impact rate hikes in a business like mine are probably, that 12 to 18 months. So you're absolutely right in what you're saying.
Lindy, you want to speak to the mortgage piece? On that.
No, so like a big thing that's been going on, and we've had a lot of email exchanges. So after the Bank of Canada went up by the 1 point last week, there's been a lot of questioning around, well, if the client is approved, is this going to change their approval? And basically what's happened now is the insurers are all saying, okay, listen, if we have an approved certificate, so meaning like a formal approval in place under the old rate, and now it's gone up by 1%, we don't have to re-adjudicate the file. Why that's important to note is a lot of people, like, last week, this week, I've got some pre-approvals in prior to the increase, and were issued prior to the increase, but the problem is pre-approval, not approval. And now all those borrowers, I had to rejig all those numbers for those clients to take into account the higher qualifying rate. Right. So it's definitely, right. It's pricing people out of the market. It's causing a huge amount of concerns, but
it's cool in the market. That's what they're trying to do. Right. They want to drop prices.
Wasn't part of it to get the new home buyers into the market. Right.
Remember what part was to get new home buyers into the market?
They wanted to control the escalation of the prices of the house initially, right?
Well, the weird part is the payment's going to be the same for the people, almost as when the prices were high, except the homeowners aren't making the money. Now the banks and the government's making the money, right?
Yes.
Same payment, just they make the money now, not the homeowners. So they said, thank you.
Yeah. Well, just awesome. Look at Jeff, a local municipality that started charging 40, 50 bucks every transfer.
Yeah, that's a new one that just got added on. That adds up with all the transfers they are coming on. Just for a transfer of land, not the deed or anything like that. 40 bucks because we did it in their municipality.
Yep.
It's nothing, right? Like, you don't think about it like that, but 40 bucks here, 40 bucks there, 40 bucks, just add it on. That's just something brand new this year.
Well, and I think, and that's what I usually tell people. It's basically, water torture or death by 1,000 cuts. People don't go bankrupt or They don't go, they don't get into financial trouble, usually because of one massive bad decision. It does happen, but usually it's a cumulative impact. So
the personal contact, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you usually get like, all right, interest rates go up. All right. Yeah. So your line of credit goes up, or you want to go get a new car. Now that cost goes up, or, you know, then work starts to slow down, and then you're just not, you know, all the, something as simple as all your social media networks or your streaming services. Now the amount of streaming services people have, the hilarity of it is, people got off of cable to save money, but they're now actually spending more money on streaming services than they ever were on cable.
Really?
And I disagree with that statement.
I'm not paying. I cut the cord a few years back. Yes, my costs have gone up, but still nowhere. Like, I was 100 and just for satellite, I think I was 150 a month. And when I had switched over and cut the cord, it worked out that I was about 80 with the increases we've had. I'm still cheaper, but it's been a while since I've done the math, because I've had a couple of emails come in, like the zone is up from 150 to 199 a year. But I'd say I'm probably still less than that 150, probably 110 a month now.
Yeah, but look at you. What's going to happen?
Yeah, but you're not the norm. You are 100% not the norm. Not
even because people got Netflix, Prime, everything. Crave. They got everything. They got to have it all.
Yeah, yeah. It's they've got the HBO Crave, which would be over $20 a month. They got the Netflix High Def. That's over.
Well, the interesting thing is going to be Netflix is dropping big time right now. Eh?
They've got Disney, which is $80 to $90 a month.
Prime,
which is another. Sorry, no. Disney's over $100 a year now.
Yeah, that's true. They went up
a year.
So that's now around another $10 a month. And then you got like it's crazy. It's death by a thousand cuts. Right. So
everyone had their own home phone now, but now you got kids. Your kids aren't old enough yet, but now my son just got his own phone at 12 at $60 a month, and then his younger brother in 2 years will have it. So our phone plan for our whole house is going to be something like $300 a month compared to a landline, you know, where the kids can phone each other. It's going to be $300 a month for our house just for cell phones.
Yep.
So like, these are the types of things that actually take, you know, that actually hurt people the most. And the interest rate increase does have an impact on that, because you increase the cost of an input. No business is going to not pass that on to a customer. I mean, they'll eat some of it, but they just, you know, like any existing contracts, but going forward, they're passing it on. It's one of the things that drives me crazy when people talk about numbers and don't put things into context. For example, you need to put numbers into context. You can't. So for example, if you ever talk to Jeff and, you know, people say, oh, housing prices are down. Jeff will tell you, Carla will tell you, Trevor will tell you. No, yeah, they're down relative to the previous months. But if you go June to June, we're 5% up. You need to put things into perspective. So like, I was having this conversation with a couple of clients, you know, and Trevor, I'm sure, has this conversation all the time. Well, we're going to wait for it to go down because it's starting to go down. No, it's down in 2022 versus
2022.
The trajectory it was on in 2021. Yeah. But if you were looking at pre-pandemic levels, it's still way up. You got to put context to things.
You're the still buying at a discount right now relative to the beginning of 2022.
You're buying at a discount relative to the beginning of 2022, right, but not relative to 2021.
Nope.
Or 2019. So you waiting is just exacerbating the issue. Because you'll never be able to get into the market, and the markets are now down, so you can't even save properly. But the one thing that drives me crazy the most, I'm seeing a lot more articles on and people commenting on, is the fact that, you know, the quote unquote fat profits, or the, you know, as the companies are now starting to report, you know, I got asked the question like, well, what do you think about these people who are making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, these businesses, and, you know, they're crying poor. And my answer to that was, okay, well, that's a very layered question. So the first thing is, are they, if they're crying poor, okay, that's just bad form. Just if you're making a couple hundred million and that's on your butt, like the grocery store chains and stuff like that, how about you don't cry poor? You just keep quiet. I go, the second part to that question is, do I have a problem with the business making that kind of money? And the answer unequivocally is no. Because if their margins are 8% and they keep their margins at 8%, and because of inflation, your profits naturally increase because you keep your margin the exact same, then why would I, if I never had a problem with it in 2019, why would I have a problem with it in 2022? You're being hypocritical. You're just saying that because they're not passing on the savings onto you. You want the business to take less on their margin. But the problem is what people don't realize is that margin is what they use to run their entire business. That's the whole business case. Carlo, I don't know if you want to chime in on that.
With any business making lots of money, that, you know, is situation. And I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, Rogers has been in the news a lot, of two, three companies that dominate our cell phone market. You know, as Canadians, I don't feel like most people think there's fair competition. You know, they have, that's the supply and demand and the economic makes our country great is, you know, that free enterprise system.
Right. Jeff, do you want to comment on it at all?
About what?
Just, you know, the topic of conversation that we're talking about right now.
He needs a refresher. He wasn't paying attention.
No, he wasn't paying attention. Yeah. Just know
people feel bad for making large
Bondo, go ahead.
Pockets of money, right? Like, no, fucking.
Well, I'll comment on it. They thought this is one of the things, being a builder, think of just rolling in the money and all that. Now, the last 2 years during the pandemic, we were super busy, but to be honest, our profits were down because of the cost of materials and all that and locking in early prices. So we probably worked twice as hard to make half the money, right? So the year before, we built half the houses and made the same amount of money as last year, building double the houses, but the profit was cut in half, right? So there's, like, even in Carlo's industry, like, running rampant the last few years. Yeah. I find, all the tradespeople's, all the material companies, anyone to be involved with building have been working their ass off the last 2 years with no stop at all, except for the beginning of the pandemic. But yeah, we're not making more money. I find everyone just running on fumes, burnt out. You know, like, you can tell because trades guys are really good. I work with a lot of tradespeople and all that, and great tradespeople I work with on a regular basis, but they don't want to take on any extra business right now. They need the weekends to recharge if they can. I haven't had a vacation in 3 years. You know, I'd love to go on vacation. Me going away is 2 days to Blue Mountain just to breathe for a second, you know, because it's been so busy. But it's not rolling in the profits. It's double the business and half the profits, but really busy. And you take it while you can because you never know when a downturn comes. But people think all the people in this industry were rolling in it. Like, all the tradespeople and businesses like Carlo, he said it earlier, you have to be competitive. You can't go in there with a retail price on all your flooring and expect to get the business in the top. You're competing with three other businesses who want that top. With tradespeople, like I know electricians and plumbers that we say, would you like to quote us on it? And we're loyal to our guys. But they're like, no, I don't want to compete with other tradespeople that do building because there's not enough profit in it for them. Like, they work off, get it done quick. They like a house like that, but they're not making loads and all that. It's a business where they have to keep that relationship going, but they're burnt out. Like, there's so many burnt out tradespeople. Like, people are trying to get quotes for, say, a concrete job in their backyard, a fence, stuff like that, and people aren't showing up. It's just because they're so burnt out right now, and it's almost good, and I'd never like to say recession's good. It's almost good because some of these things need to be reset in price and all that, and then you'll see the cream rise to the top. So the people that sustained it and worked through these busy times, we're going to remember the ones who did that because it's been a tough 2 years. Like, nobody thinks it's been tough the last 2 years. It's been hell. And, you know, we got through it, but there's still pain to come. So we'll see what happens the way we get out of this pandemic is they're aiming for a recession. We'll see what happens.
You're totally right, Jeff. And, you know, I will say about, you know, profits in that construction industry. I'm sure everyone thinks that it's super profitable. It hasn't been, because, you know, you take on a contract one and then your costs come in higher. You know, I agreed to do flooring, let's say, in a house. And, you know, so we make our deal. And then 4 months later, I got to show up with the floors are up. So everyone's had their margins eroded. The only in, you know, these last 2 years are basically been, you know, any buyer who has a property, but by the time they close on it, has made tons of money. But it's not the builder.
It's absolutely crummy that people are actually, you know, using these interest rate increases as an example to kind of hit home onto small businesses who have been taking it, and also big corporations too, that have taken it really on the chin from a profit perspective. And now that everything's recovering and they want to keep their margins the exact same. Now, am I for corporation bailout with government money? Absolutely not. You can't have your cake and eat it too, right? Like, you can't sit there and in the heyday say, stay off my back, leave me alone. And then when things go south, turn around and go, hey, government, I want you to intervene now and I want you to give me free money. No, that should not be the case. It should be one or the other. But yeah, no, it's what I'm hearing and reading right now going through, and even on the social media platforms, I don't think people fully understand, because all these costs started to increase probably 6 months into the pandemic. But prices relatively stayed the same because businesses had already pre-bought their inventory for a period of time. And that period of time varies for every business. Like, Carlo, you would have, I don't know what your inventory cycle is, but you try to do just in time. But what is it? Like, you try to look out?
So, you know, it's different. Like a subdivision project that we're doing, you know, we're ordering material constant price with the supplier and say, hey, we're, you know, going to be buying project. Supplier says, oh, I can do it for, you know, $5 a square foot, and then increase. But with COVID, you know, it was new territory. So you had suppliers kind of all bet, you know, no one quite knew what to do. So sometimes you would go to renegotiate and they would except sometimes you couldn't. So it was for sure.
Well, we're going to go to the, I guess, the segment of the program that we want to do, just advice and tips and stuff like that. We've got our market update pretty much. I'll touch on it briefly in my advice. So, Carlo, just because I know you are tight for time and, you know, how about you, with regards to any, like, just a weekly, bi-weekly tip that you would want to give that you think that maybe you came across or that you want to maybe give to our listeners or people who are watching live right now in general. What's that?
For like flooring related?
Just anything in general. Like, yeah, it could be your business specifically, but it could be also something that someone could really take away a good nugget. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a good one.
Always make a bet with Brendan Curry when he's drinking at an auction.
Maybe even something along the lines of you had mentioned about the foyers, I think. Is there something else like that you can be like, heads up? This is.
I talk about coming trends that you think are most current right now.
Just, you know, my priority when I'm like helping someone design a space, you know, do something a little unique. So whether it's a builder who's doing a model home, do something different that makes this house unique from everything else. And you want to certainly follow the broader trends, but you don't want to be too trendy. That's my advice when I meet with a client, is I kind of look for an opportunity to do something home and they haven't been seen before. So continually try to be creative.
So stay trendy, but a little unique.
Yes.
And one more final, just a one cool. I have a curiosity question for you, Carlo. And then Jeff, maybe you can chime in when it's your piece.
I was wondering when you're doing stunt doubles for the next Rock movie. Is it Rock?
Doing stunt doubles.
Or is it Vin?
I wish, buddy. I wish.
How often should someone update their house? Every 10 years?
Yes.
Whenever the wife wants to do it. Whenever the wife wants to do it. That's when you do it. Happy wife, happy life.
That's probably the answer. So, I mean, when you're doing... You try to do stuff that's not going to date too much, right? You want to, you know, if you do lots of white in the bathroom, it might not be trendy in 5 years, but you're not going to. I mean, it's so much money to do to renovate a house. Yeah, 10 years. So I think certain elements, like maybe you want to paint, you know, on a faster cycle, on a much, much slower cycle. But, you know, everyone's situation is different.
When the wife says do it.
Collins, your little tip and advice of the week or biweekly or of the, month.
As far as housing going right now, I think if you're looking to buy a home, I find at least right now in July and August, it's going to be quite the buyer's market. So be stiff on negotiating, you know. Take a look around. There's a lot of inventory out there right now. You see price drops on a regular basis. If it hasn't sold in the first 2 weeks, you should be able to sharpen that pencil and get something out of them. It sucks to say that right now, but you got to read the market. So when it's a seller's market, you know, you got to giddy up and pay for it. Right now, I don't find it being a balanced market. I think the houses that are really gorgeous and you know, price, like do a CMA on it. Me and Trevor talk about this a lot of times. See what it's selling in the last 2 weeks because it's consistently going down. And like you were saying about interest rates, whenever they raise, you don't see the true impact immediately, right? So it should take way longer than 2-3 months. But right now, like when I'm buying stuff, I'm negotiating pretty good and trying to get some money off. And that money I get off, I usually tell them, for example, a house that I just got an accepted offer on, we had 25 grand off. And I told them that we should be able to get you all new floors on that and potentially a new kitchen. You know, like Kevin, we're not talking top of the line or anything like that, but I said engineered hardwood floors on the main level of about 700 square feet and then new kitchen cabinets on it. And that paid for with the negotiation off, which in turn would increase the value of his house. So it's back to what we used to talk about a long time ago when we started this, like a Purchase Plus program, which I don't even know is doable right now. Maybe you can talk to that, Trevor, is negotiate a little bit and help pay for some renovations that might clearly be needed on the house. Because if the house doesn't need any renovations, it's probably selling. If it does, try to negotiate that off. That's what I'll say
And if you just want to remind people what CMA stands for?
CMA stands for Comparative Market Analysis. So, for example, if you're looking to buy a 1,200 square foot bungalow in a cul-de-sac, look for other ones that recently sold that are about the same size in a similar area and see what they're selling for.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Collins. To Mr. Bond. Litigate. Sue. I want to bill every 6 minutes.
No? I'm a solicitor, not a litigator. So.
Yeah, I know.
I'm the opposite of Jeff. I'm more of a sellers hold strong. I've done well in buying and selling real estate over the years. And my motto has always been, if you're never in a position where you are forced to sell, you won't lose money in real estate. So my message to the sellers are, you know, hold strong a little bit. And I think this is a lot of it's a knee-jerk reaction. We're coming out of a couple of years of chaos, for lack of any other word that could possibly grasp what we've all gone through. So I believe this is a knee-jerk reaction. I don't know how long the jerk is going to happen. A little bit of correction from what's happened in early 2022. And I think we're just going to stay the course a little bit. Obviously, yes, Jeff, it's going to be, I think it is a buyer's market at this point in time. But I think by...
Well, and when I say negotiate, I don't mean like just gouge the crap out of them, but I'm saying that you can shave a little bit of money off there to help pay for some renovations. 10 grand pays for flooring. 25 can pay for a new kitchen, you know? $50,000 I sell the guitar. Yeah, buy yourself a little bit of leverage. Right. We're not going north on price negotiating now. We're going south.
Yeah. I also have to make comment about our friendly neighbors to the north. And obviously, you know, this is a little bit more of a political kind of topic, but you know, we know that they've overturned Roe v. Wade, right? So I would have never thought that we would have ever saw that kind of happen in Roe v. Wade, for those that don't know, is you know, the right for a female to choose what they want to do with their body.
Our neighbors to the north or neighbors to the south?
Neighbors to the south. Yeah.
I say north.
Yeah. I was thinking, what is he talking about? What neighbors? People.
I don't.
Russia.
Yeah. Russia. Yeah, go over top.
I don't think that anything of the sort would ever kind of filter into our society here. But anyways,
not with the leader we have in Canada right now in his Dumb and Dumber haircut.
Yeah, but I just find that
great haircut.
It's just insanity. It just shows how insane the States is right now.
And, it's a free for all down there right now.
Just a little bit nerve wracking being their close neighbors in terms of where all that dust is going to settle, right?
So. Yeah, still the hockey players in our Canadian teams are going back down south. Johnny Gaudreau.
Yeah.
Peace.
Lindy, what's your little piece of advice if you want to
lock your RV at night?
that 1 point increase was a shocker. Right. End of the day for people.
It was
dramatically impacting your qualifying rate. As we've talked about before, you know, it used to be 5.25 or contract plus 2%. So really it's telling people to just weather the storm, at least for the time being. You know, wait if you can. It's you know, Jeff had kind of talked about, you know, well, if Purchase Plus still works and all that stuff is still around, we can still make it happen. But if your budget is getting shrunk by 30 grand because of the qualifying rate, then it in most cases is eating into your budget to even be able to do that Purchase Plus.
So I got a quick question for you, Trev. I had a client tell me that Scotia told them they no longer bridge mortgages. Because the prices are going down right now, so people aren't closing, they won't bridge a mortgage between closes?
No, so I don't know the full context to the statement of your client to make that comment. However, a change that Scotia did make is as long as they have a mortgage on the new property, they will provide you with bridge financing. If you're just walking into Scotiabank and saying, hey, I want a bridge, TD did the same thing. They're not just going to go and willy-nilly give you the money, right?
Okay. So they want some collateral, right?
Well, no, like because bank, as Josh knows, banks are asking for different type of security registrations on bridge financing, depending on the dollar amount. But
the length of time.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, right. But
30 day plus usually, right? A lot of
times. Yeah, 30 to 45, depending on the institution. But the like we've heard before from banks is that mortgages are loss leaders. They don't make money off of mortgages, which all know is a bunch of BS. They like to say that about bridge financing now, is that bridge financing is a lost leader. They do it as a value add for their customers, but they're not making any money doing it.
So it costs the person nothing. They're paying pretty good money for bridge finance. That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, depending on the institution.
4%, right? Usually.
I'm finding a lot of them are switching to a fee plus model. So setting a say a fee at $250 or $500 application fee to put the bridge together, then potential security registrations, and then their rate, which is variable, Prime Plus, and anything from Prime Plus 2 to Prime Plus 5. So if you're on the lower end, there's usually a fee associated with it. If you're on the higher end, there might be, if there's a fee, it's a smaller fee, higher borrowing costs. So
they're saying $1,000 they make in 2 weeks of bridge is nothing.
Yeah, they say they don't make any money off of that. Now, something that has come up more recently in respect to the, you know, certain institution won't do something. There's a lot of issues that people are being faced with around porting their mortgage over to a new property or blending their mortgage. Because, you know, if you're in a rate of 1.5% that we did in 2020, 2021, and you're buying a new house today, well, you don't want to sacrifice that 1.5% or 2% that you have. So the idea is to blend it right with the new contract. And there are some lenders that are kind of restricting what you can and can't do in that capacity. So that's something that's been creeping up that people are getting frustrated with. It's not an all the time occurrence. It depends on the circumstances.
Okay.
For the record, Johnny Hockey.
Well,
Johnny Hockey's American, born and raised.
I know.
He played.
They're leaving. Kachuk's leaving next. Leafs got to go get him.
Yeah, with what? Buttons?
Nylander.
Like, what's salary cap? Oh, okay.
Nylander, Kerfoot, Cole.
Okay.
Go Habs, go.
I guess my final piece before we close this off, I guess, is just with the markets. I do believe that we have hit the bottom of the market, notwithstanding any unforeseen circumstances that might come down the pipeline. But as of right now, this morning, I think the S&P 500 was at 3,900 points, slightly down. Dow Jones was a little bit up. NASDAQ was a little bit up. But I think we've hit the bottom of those respective indices. And I think the volatility is not going to go away with your investments. I think we're going to have some good volatility for the next at least 12 months before we get some more steady movement in the up direction. So on that piece, stay invested. That's when the difference between missing just the 10 best days is astronomical. Over the course of 20 to 30 years of missing just 10 days in 20 to 30 years, the returns and the end amount in that account or in your investment account is astronomical. So stay invested. It's during times of volatility where you actually make the biggest wins in the long run. And if you look at any great investor, both either real estate or flippers or people who renovate, or even in the markets, all the people who are extremely successful are the ones that actually buy in a dip or actually buy during a recession or when property is lower.
It's a
buy market. If you're in the market, pull the trigger. Now is the best time than any just to get into the market and just to kind of lock it in, because it will statistically, it'll keep going up.
Yep.
And that's basically my tip. Carlo, thank you once again.
Thanks, Carlo.
For coming on.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciated your insight on all that, your professional insight. Look what I did there. Bondo, take us out.
Help us help you stay informed.
Ciao.
Thank you, everyone.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundel from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Do, did, will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first five episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Produced by Crier Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.